Future Proof Extra from News Talk.
This is Future Proof on News Talk. I'm Jonathan McRae. Now, spite is something we've all encountered in some shape or another in our lives. It's a bitter and lonely path to go down, and one that serves no one in the end. We don't feel good after being spiteful. So why do we do it? Well, Simon McCarthy Jones is Associate Professor in Clinical Psychology and Neuropsychology at Trinity College Dublin, and he's got a book out. It's called Spite, The Upside of Your Dark Side. Are you a spiteful person, Simon?
I have my moments, as I'm sure we all do.
Is that why you wanted to do this book, or why were you interested in spite?
I think it really came about because of the events of 2016, the Brexit referendum and the US presidential election. I was in Australia at the time and wasn't quite looped into what was going on in the UK and was quite surprised by what happened.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about why people had voted this way. A memory came back to me from when I was about 8 years old at school, and our headmaster had come into the assembly and said to us that when we went home that night, we had to turn off the tap when we were brushing our teeth, which was obviously good advice. But for some reason, some part of me did not like being told what to do outside the school by a school teacher. And so that night I spitefully left the tap running. I started to think whether this resentment at being told what we should do and what was the right thing to do and what we must do, having our freedom restricted, might have played some small role in Brexit and Hillary's loss in 2016.
Yes, and I have two boys. And sometimes, against their better judgment, they choose to behave badly in that way. And spite, I think, is probably a strong word to put on the shoulders of a six-year-old. But it does seem that way, that sometimes it's almost, cutting off our nose to spite our face. We choose to do this. So do we have a psychological definition of spite?
So in its strongest version, you would see spite as being harming or inflicting a cost on somebody else, whilst also inflicting a cost or harm on yourself as well. So that would be a strong definition. In weaker terms, you might see it as harming or inflicting a cost on somebody else, whether not benefiting yourself or simply risking harm yourself, so not actually incurring harm yourself.
So tell me about the science in this area then. Is it all retrospective, or can you do behavioural science with something like spite and get through ethics approval?
So, as I'm sure you know, psychologists love a good questionnaire. So there've been questionnaire-based studies. The first one came out of David Marcus's lab in Washington State in 2014. That was the first time a psychologist had tried to create a questionnaire to measure spitefulness. And that found that around 5 to 10% of people for each answer conceded that they would behave spitefully in a certain situation. Obviously, questionnaires have fairly major limitations. So researchers really started studying the behaviour of spite back in the late 70s. So this started in Germany in 1977, which was a turbulent time. You had people like the Baader-Meinhof gang operating. There were kidnappings, hijackings, and a lot of ultimatums being set. And a behavioural economist created a game called the Ultimatum Game, which could measure spiteful behaviour. And that is still what we use today.
How does the game work?
So it's similar to a game you were talking with Michael McCullough a few weeks ago. So in the game, you come into the lab and you're told there's somebody else in the next room and they've been given, say, 10 euros and they've been asked to split some of it with you. So you might hear that they've offered you, say, 3 euros out of the 10, and you have two choices. Your first choice is to just take the offer. You only play the game once and you can just walk out of the lab then with 3 euros in your pocket. But the downside is that the other person will keep the balance. So the other person will keep the remaining 7 euros, which you might not be thrilled about. The other option is to say, I don't want the offer at all. And if you turn down the offer, which is defined as being spiteful, then you lose the 3 euros and the other person takes home nothing either. So everybody loses in that situation.
And do people actually choose to walk away and leave both participants penniless?
So if people are offered, say, 2 euros or less, then about half the time they will just say, I don't want the money, and we'll walk away. We'll prefer to walk away with nothing rather than walk away with the 2 euros and the other person get the 8.
Okay, so for me, when you're dealing with such low amounts, I mean, how do psychologists account for playfulness or testing boundaries? I have to say, I probably do this just to see what would happen next? I mean, and and to do, you know, sometimes if you're a playful person or you want to see what's going on, you might do something provocative to see what happens. I mean, €2 is not something I'm going to behave naturally about. If you made it €2,000, I think I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be spiteful.
Yeah, so that's a good point. So in the States, Elizabeth Hoffman and her colleagues did the game, and it was $100 on the line each game. And they still found if somebody was offered $30, again, around half of the time, people would turn it down. I mean, that's quite a lot of money to turn down. It's also being run in Indonesia, where due to the obviously the slightly lower levels of incomes there, the amount that was on the table was equivalent to about a tenth of somebody's annual monthly spend. And again, you saw a similar pattern. So even when there are large amounts on the table, people are still prepared to turn it down if it's spiteful.
But, sorry, walk me through this. You're saying that people who took part in this study had the opportunity of turning down money that they were going to get and that other people were going to get, but for what reason?
You can see it's for being for two reasons. One is we have a very powerful urge to see fairness done. And if somebody treats us unfairly, we can have a very powerful reaction to say, you're not going to treat me unfairly. And if that involves me bearing even quite a high cost to punish you for that, I will still do that.
So just to clarify, you're telling me that even with large sums of money, a stranger will walk into a lab and choose to turn down a decent size of a decent amount of money for them just to make sure that a completely random stranger they've had no interactions with also doesn't get that money.
Yes, justice is, it's like a drug. So when this has been done in the MRI scanner, what you see is that when the person has a chance to punish somebody who's been acting unfairly, the same regions of the brain are lighting up as to when someone's anticipating cocaine, who uses cocaine. So justice and seeing justice done is literally almost like taking a drug.
But how is this justice if there's been no interaction with the other person?
It depends on cultural factors. So in our culture, there's obviously expectations as to what would be a fair offer. And we obviously go into a game expecting a certain level of fairness. And if that is violated, then we may well look to punish the other person. In different cultures, there are different perceptions as to what is or is not fair. So you'll see slightly different behaviour. But wherever you look, you will see at least some proportion of people be prepared to punish in this way.
So you're sort of punishing the person for being greedy because they didn't offer you 50%.
Broadly speaking, so you can see it as being a form of counter-dominant behaviour. So you're punishing somebody so they don't get ahead of you. Or you could view it alternatively as being a form of dominance behaviour that you would quite like this other person to lose a lot more than you would. So you make a relative gain on them in some sense.
Gosh, that is, it's interesting, isn't it? That because you think something is unfair, you would be willing to act so strongly against yourself. What about other scenarios? Do we see this in non-lab environments? Have we looked at real life events and examined spite from a scientific point of view?
We have. So a lot of it, again, is based around this automating game and what factors influence it. So what's interesting, to me at least, is what is causing us to be spiteful? What triggers in our environment kind of open this behavior up to us and seem to make us want to do it? So when the ultimatum game was played with the Nama people of Namibia, what they found there was that farmers who were farming on very poor quality land tended to be much more spiteful on the ultimatum game than farmers who were farming on the much richer land. So there seems to be something about if we're operating in an environment of scarcity, where maybe we're encountering increasing competition, something triggers us to act more spitefully. So Molly Crockett, who's a leading neuroscientist, and her team in Yale, came up with the idea that this may be something to do with diet. So in order to make the neurotransmitter serotonin, you need tryptophan, and tryptophan comes from an essential amino acid, meaning we must get it from our diet. So the theory is that if resources get more scarce, if the world's getting more competitive, we get less food coming in and our tryptophan levels fall and our serotonin levels fall. And the theory is that that might trigger us to be more spiteful. And Molly and a team have tested this in the lab. the way they did this was that people would come into the lab and they'd be randomized into two conditions. In one condition, they'd drink a tryptophan depleting drink, which would lower their serotonin levels. The other group just had a normal drink. They then played the ultimatum game, and what they found was that the group who had drank the drink, which lowered their serotonin levels, were more spiteful. Then they flipped it around, being good scientists the other way. They had another group come in. Half were randomized to drink a drink which contained a form of selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, an SSRI, which would boost their serotonin levels, and the others had a normal drink. And again, they found the converse pattern here. So those whose serotonin levels were boosted tended to act less spitefully on the ultimatum game.
That is fascinating, but also, I suppose, very understandable for anyone who's been hangry. And this is something that I've both witnessed in myself and my children, that when we are hungry, we're much quicker to be cross with others. And I suppose that would probably spill into spite.
Slightly, but what they found was they were interested in exactly why is this happening. So what they were able to determine was that when the serotonin levels went down, people got more pleasure from inflicting pain on the others. So they were able to really kind of dig down into the detail of the mechanism.
Right. And does that mean that essentially we want people to feel the same way we do? We don't, you know, the old adage of how to make a millionaire depressed, introduce them to a billionaire. Is that part of the mechanism that we want people to be roughly where we are? And if we're in pain, we want others to be in pain too.
That's quite plausible. I mean, we do show a positional bias. So very often it's not, we're less concerned about how thick our wallet is and more concerned about how thick our wallet is compared to our neighbour. So we often are more concerned with relative position rather than absolute kind of gains and amounts.
Are there personality types that are more prone to being spiteful, or is it a temporal phenomenon, as you described, like if we're hungry, we're more likely to be spiteful?
That does. So spite seems to be associated with the personality trait of disagreeableness, which turns out to have some potentially interesting implications, suggesting maybe why spite is still around. So if you look at levels of creativity in people, you tend to find a correlation between people who are higher in disagreeableness tend to be more creative. Although a caveat there would be that they tend to be more creative in the science and maths fields and not in the, say, dance or poetry fields. So disagreeability seems to have some correlation with creativity in the sciences.
That's interesting. I'd say probably it also has it been measured in actors or directors? And certainly there are many stories of good actors being, well, unpleasant to those around them.
Indeed. I'm not sure it's been measured at that level. Mm. And again, with these kind of findings, you wouldn't want it to be taken that this justified in some sense, that your creativity justified you behaving badly. Because, and again, there are studies that speak to this. So this correlation between disagreeableness and creativity, if you look at environments which really encourage people to think critically, this correlation really starts to weaken. So it's not that we need disagreeable people necessarily, it's that we really need to kind of boost the levels of critical thinking in our environments, or at least our openness to encouraging people to think in that way.
Do we see spitefulness in animals?
There is some debate about that. Some primatologists think we do, but in my reading of the studies, we don't. So they've tried to devise an animal equivalent of the ultimatum game. So in this study, you would pop a banana outside a chimpanzee's room, and you would have a mechanism which didn't allow them to get that banana and move the banana across to another chimpanzee on the other side of the room. But there's a little rope which goes back to the first chimpanzee's cage, and he can pull that rope and collapse the table, therefore stopping the other chimpanzee getting a broadly undeserved banana. And whilst we think humans clearly would do that in many cases, as we know from the ultimatum game, but chimps don't collapse the table. They don't seem to display the same kind of spite that we do.
It's unsurprising, of course, because we are the bête noire of the primate family, aren't we? So what is the point in studying spite, Simon? What can we use with the information that you're studying? Or is this just an interesting journey into understanding the human mind?
I think it's interesting in itself. So why are we spiteful? What are the potential benefits of spite, which cause it to still be around, which seem to be tied into potentially benefits with making you more competitive, potentially more creative. I think it has a strong role in potentially boosting fairness in society and increasing levels of fair behavior. That's what some of the studies suggest to us. And for me, it offers a lens to try and view the events in the world through and to try and make sense of. So for example, I mentioned the 2016 election. I think a lot of what we see in the spite research literature explains to some degree why Hillary was fighting an uphill battle in that election and why, conversely, Joe Biden hasn't had quite the same struggle that Hillary had.
They're not voting for Donald Trump. They're voting to spite Hillary Clinton, essentially.
That seems to be the case. So in 2000, when you had Bush Gore, and in 2008, when you had Obama McCain, what you found was that most people voted for their candidate. They said, I'm voting for Obama, not voting for Obama too, because I don't like McCain, I'm voting for my candidate. 2016, things spin around. You find that I think it was 53% of Trump voters said they were more voting against Hillary than they were for Trump. And looking at CNN's initial exit polls for this 2020 election, it seems that, again, it's reverted back to the pattern where most people have voted for their candidate, supposed to be voting against somebody else, although I'd like to see firmer figures on that.
If we can recognise spite, would that be useful in terms of negotiations or conversations? Are there certain behaviours, facial expressions, or are there things associated with spite that we could identify and therefore change how we're communicating or negotiating with someone?
Possibly. So in terms of facial reactions, so if we're talking, if somebody is going to act spitefully, it may well be preceded by moral outrage, and moral outrage is kind of a combination of anger and disgust. So if you look at people who are about to act spitefully on the ultimatum game, facial analysis shows that they show a characteristic facial muscular pattern which is associated with disgust, and you also see areas of the brain associated with disgust lighting up. So you can probably see it coming, but again, for me, I'd probably focus more on what is it that triggers spite in other people? What do we know about what triggers spite, and how can we potentially avoid that where possible in order to stop triggering spite in the first place?
And that core of that seems to be a sense of injustice.
A range of things. It can be a sense of injustice. It can be a sense that the other person thinks that they're superior to us. It can be perceiving that the other person has got gains undeservedly, and there's a body of experimental literature pointing towards that. But it can also be for completely perverse reasons, in a sense. So you see the phenomenon of do-gooder derogation. So in this, somebody actually helps you, and yet you still punish them for it, potentially because we think that the person believes that do-gooder is gaining a status advantage back acting in that way, and so therefore in the longer term it would be better to punish that person rather than to allow that person to help you.
In other words, they get the sort of halo for their behavior and step over you in terms of status, and to stop them doing that and maintain your level of reputation or status in a group, you punish that person. Have we seen that in studies in behavioural trials?
Yeah, we've seen that. Studies have been done with that. So it would be done through a basic form of investment game. So you go into a lab to play an economic game, and you can all invest in like a group investment fund. The more you invest, the more you'll all get. And even if you don't invest in the investment fund, you still get some proceeds from that fund at the end. So obviously there's an incentive for everybody to be generous and put money into that fund. And what you find is that for some people, if others have really put a lot into the pot, much more than they themselves have, at the end of the game, they will punish that person for their generosity, even though they've benefited from that generosity in the short term.
And how do they punish them?
They have the option of taking money away from them at the end of the game, so financially punishing them. And we think that
they don't get the money themselves.
No. it's just taking it away from them.
So somebody gives to a general pot generously, and then the person who didn't give as much, because they didn't give as much and feel like they were being a little bit more selfish, takes money away from the generous people to make them to punish them, essentially.
Absolutely.
As
Voltaire said, the best is the enemy of the good. So the theory is that the person who's being very generous is going to look like a better person for other people to collaborate with and partner with in future. So they look more socially desirable. So on one hand, punishing that generous person can look petty and vindictive. But on the other hand, it can make them not be so generous in future, which again makes you look personally more attractive as a potential partner because you're not being outgooded.
We see this in social groups quite a bit, don't we? Where someone is very good with their time, offering to do, you know, whether it's school runs or help out with events, that eventually you'll see one or two people who aren't doing much bitching about that person, despite the fact that they're doing so much for the group, as being a do-gooder, or this person, you know, they think they're so great. And it's an attempt to besmirch someone who is being kind and generous so that the gap in between the bitcher and the bitchee isn't so great.
Indeed. And what's interesting to me is what the effects of the do-gooder's message are. So there's some studies which have looked at people's attitudes towards vegetarianism. And what they've found is that if people punish vegetarians because they maybe think that they're morally superior, if they punish the vegetarian, then you find that they're actually more open to not eating meat at the end of the study. So there seems to be some small effect where if you punish the messenger, you actually turn out to be more open to their message in the end, which I'm sure is really a little consolation.
It sounds very strange, but of course it's probably because you admire that person, you wish you were a bit more like them, you're spiteful, and then you feel guilty afterwards, which... it's probably an experience some of us might be able to speak to. Really interesting stuff. Thanks very much for joining us. The book is called Spite, and the author is Simon McCarthy-Jones. Simon, thanks for your time.
Pleasure.